Hello, welcome and kumusta, and thank you for joining me. My name is Tao and I am your occupational therapist. I have been thinking about documentation and some reviews with regard to documentation. Every now and again, every department will come up with some form of a documentation audit. And just to review whether the documentation is in keeping with the standards of documentation. And if you look at this with regard to our resources, there is a statement with regard to documentation in the Royal College of Occupational Therapy. And that is where we are basing our documentation into. That's fine. That is, again, the practice that is available. As per usual, I've just been thinking and analyzing about our documentation, the way we write things down. And it's been so many years since I have come across with a practice that is really, what would I say, really at a level or at a standard that I am happy with. What do I mean by that? If you look at some of the documentation standards, it is stating sometimes one of them would be that you need to be able to write in a clear manner. Of course, it's going to be clear. Does that mean the handwriting needs to be clear? Or does that mean that your statements needed to be clear? And that is one point of discussion and potential debate, because when you say clear for whom? Is it going to be clear to occupational therapists? Is it going to be clear for a third party reader? So that's something that needed to be clarified. Remember, guys, there will be some documentation where you would be using terminologies, and we can be using terminologies that is and that are specific to the profession itself. And for a regular reader, that may not be very clear. There can be some interventions that may not be clear for a lot of people. For example, if I do cognitive perceptual retraining, if I document that, I know that that's what I am doing. But what about another reader who does not know what that is? So in terms of the clarity, that becomes a gray area. I've noticed that a lot of documentation is focused on some basic parts of it, that documentation should be signed, of course. Back in the days where it was paper-based, yes, you need to sign the document. Dated, yes, back in the paper days. But nowadays, it's now digital world. So you don't sign it, but you stamp it, digitally sign it. And the process is when you sign something digitally, then you log into it and then you write down your name, or there's a shortcut where you can stamp it. That's fine. But sometimes people forget to stamp the notes. But there's also one thing that you probably are not remembering is that every time you log into a system and you write down a note, as soon as you log in using your own card, that is technically auditable. That can be traced back to the author. You may change your name, which you shouldn't, but even if you do in the documentation of the notes, when it comes to the digital world, then you can have somebody checking up and who logged in, and there will be a digital trail in there, one way or another. So time will come, there will be digital investigators. That's what I envision. Other thing is, back in the days when you have to do your session, you have to write down your documentation, you have to write things like heart rate and blood pressure and all of these vital signs that you observe before you do some sessions. Again, that's always been the practice when it was paper-based and before you do some physical session, where those things matter. They do matter very much. But then the argument is, what if you are working in critical care where a person is being monitored every minute? or every hour, there's a log of that. Do you want to replicate those things again before you do your session? Mind you, you can always cross-reference the time of your session and the time a nursing staff has written something down. You can always cross-reference those things. The wonderful world of digital captures the things already, but we probably don't know that. So what we bring is we bring in the old habits of doing what we do with paper and then carrying it on doing and writing it down. So those are some of the things. There are some gray areas when it comes to documentation and the tricky part of the digital documentation. Going back to what I said earlier on, there are some documentation styles and standards that I have done in the past that I have not been seeing in practice. Perhaps it was very popular in the 80s or in the 90s, but most recently, in the last 15, 20 years anyway, I don't see it as a standard. What are these things? There are three notes that I find that we, perhaps as a profession as a whole or generally, perhaps are not labeling the notes that we are writing down. There are three notes. And what are these three? There should actually be four. Well, the very popular one would be the initial assessment note or the initial contact note. That's good. That is very common. That is usual for a lot of places, whether it be paper-based or digital. There is always a place where you write down the history, the baseline information of the patient, everything, you write those things down. But then again, going back to the digitalization and the digital world, you can say that everybody's doing it. So everybody, every profession who's doing the first contact with the patient will be assessing and will be asking the patient the same thing about the social history, who do they live with, do they live in a house or a bungalow, who's doing their shopping, who's their social support, who's their next of kin. Everybody is likely to ask a social history, which I said, and a medical history, and what was the past medical history. And then there'd be multiple areas where you would find this. Every profession would be asking the same things. The question is, which one would you take as a P that is reliable and that would be the valid and the authority when it comes to that? So doctors would be asking it partly. Nursing staff would do it, they'd be partly. GP, there'd be part information that would be given. What else? Nurses would be doing it, you'd have some part information. So every information is scattered around. There is not one formal document where you can do it and it's not duplicated. And when it is written in that document, everybody trusts that document. We don't have that. That's the one. That's the initial contact note. So you have social history, medical history. The one thing that is likely going to be missing on that part would be the problems pertinent to occupational therapy. So now with the digital world, you can have problems, but the definition of problems is very specific to other MDT members, like problems that would come out as a stroke, for example. So it becomes a medical problem. What's being missed are the problems pertinent to occupational therapy. What are the occupational therapy problems? Because this is medically centered, that's a part that's not being captured. Again, imagine if there is one central document that you can write down the problem. That would surely be efficient. And you can see every profession, like I'm a doctor, these are the problems relevant to me. I'm a physiotherapist, these are the problems relevant to me. Occupational therapist, these are the problems relevant to me. So when we're doing that and we do that in that manner, it becomes an interdisciplinary practice where we have a patient and then we share the practice, and it will really stop duplication. That's another document that is missing, like the problem statement. But it has to be an overall patient-centered problem statement. The other thing would be the treatment plan. All documentations, based on my observation, they are all silos. That's multidisciplinary, everybody working parallel to one another. I have my problems as a doctor, they would say, and they would document based on their problems and their goal treatment plan. OTs would be the same, physios would be the same, speech and language would be the same, dietetics would be the same. But there is not one single document that everybody agrees on that states, okay, I'm writing it down here. And if that ever happens, and when that ever happens, there is going to be so less of a replication. The next documentation that is available, and this is useful for a lot of people, and this is common, contact note. They don't define it as contact notes, but people define it as the note. So it can be an OT notes, can be a physio notes, but this would be every contact and what took place during the session. So that's the contact note. The third report is a weekly progress report. I remember doing that when I was working in a rehab facility. I had to do a weekly progress report. But then since I've worked with NHS, there is no need for that. Patients don't necessarily have to stay for a week in the hospital. So perhaps a weekly progress note is something that is not suitable in an acute facility. But if you are in a rehab facility, that should be something, because it gives a trail of the progress of the patient. And then the last part is the discharge note. And this is a discharge note specific to the profession. And that's something that I haven't been seeing that's being used usually, like something that I have not observed people doing a lot of. I mean, there is a note and a person's been discharged on the note, on their contact note, and that is fine. But the discharge note itself is something that I have not observed. And there are some parameters on that that we need to see. From my experience, yes, there are people that are writing discharge summary or OT discharge note, and it's part of the discharge letter that goes along with the doctors. Don't get me wrong, that's fine. That is true. People are using that. Other trusts are more religious about doing that. But what I'm saying is that it's not a standard that is mandated. It's best practice, but it is not mandated. And perhaps in the future, that's going to be one of those standards that we will be seeing. When I am speaking about discharge summary and discharge note, it has a format and it goes like this. So there is an introduction. This is a case of Mr. Jones, a 53-year-old gentleman who was admitted on February 14 following a pneumonia. Mr. Jones was seen and referred to occupational therapy and was provided with the following input: assessment, ADL retraining, equipment provision activities. Patient was initially seen and the following problems were noted pertinent to OT. Patient couldn't get out of bed. Patient can't get to the toilet. He was dependent with toilet hygiene. Patient was at risk of falls. Oh, that should come in before the intervention. So patient was then provided with the following OT interventions: functional assessment, functional retraining, education with regards to use of adaptive aids, equipment provision activities. After 5 sessions and on date of discharge, patient is performing at 90% compared to baseline activities. He's been made safer with his toilet transfers because of the adaptive aid. He was referred to reablement care for follow-up retraining with the view of him getting independent with bath transfers and with a view of him getting independent with meal preparation activities. Should you have any questions, please contact occupational therapy at such and such and such. That's it. And thank you so much. That is a summary where you have the summary of the patient, the introduction, then the date when they were referred and the results of the assessment, and then you highlight every aspect that is pertinent to occupational therapy. You note down the amount of time the patient was seen and the number of days patients were seen, and then the outcome and then the closure. Have you ever seen that? Has any of you seen that kind of note? Sometimes I would write that kind of note if I have to close the case and I have to pass on the case to another colleague in another trust, for example, or in a rehab facility. I would do that. And again, there's no expectation that I would do that, but it is something that I would do, or I would either give that to the patient or I would give that to the receiving trust as well. It's almost like a handover note. There you go, guys. Those are the actual four types of OT notes that I wish we can be consistent in using, or we should explore using. There are some that we use all the time, like the initial contact note or initial assessment note. The treatment planning note, it's a hit or miss on that one. Sometimes people think that it is only an exercise. That's why people don't get it right. If you think of these notes as an exercise, then you will not get it right. But if you think it is essential in promoting your service, it is essential in writing down and showing to the service user and to the wider public of what you've done, then it becomes a part of your method, part of your recommendation. If you are perhaps working as a private therapist, these are the ones that you will be getting paid for. These are standardized practices that you will see, and a lot of, I guess, pediatric therapists are using, and those in the private field are using. There you go, guys. I hope you learned a little something today. If you find it interesting, then go and talk to your friends about it and learn together, grow together. Pass it around. Just remember, anything you do matters and has an outcome. Until next time, bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, talk to your friends and colleagues about it. Like it, subscribe, share, and do what you can to appease whatever algorithm that is at play. Just remember, guys, anything you do matters and has an outcome. Until next time, bye.